A Lifetime original podcast.
There's like a two-year-old who's on Vanderpump Rules, Sheena's daughter named Summer Moon. And I would pay like probably a pretty crazy amount for Summer Moon and Conrad to have a play date. Like I just want, I got to get them in the same room.
I love a Lifetime movie. I'm out, but Keisha's in.
Why do mean people adopt children?
The game has changed. The game has changed.
Now I look at it and I go, why am I dressed like a realtor?
And I didn't even know how she kept making good music when nobody is supporting her.
And your name's Boobie, so you already got an extra set of boobies.
He is a white man in a fedora, and I immediately said evil. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of I Love a Lifetime Movie. Yes, I do. I am one of your hosts, Naomi Ekparagon, here striking, hanging on by a damn thread. And you know what gets me through? My co-host, the iconic, the summer haircut, but also on Struggle Street a damn self, Megan Gilman.
Oh,
talk
my.
To me, sis. Talk to me, sis. I ain't talked to you this week.
I know. Well, I sent you a voice memo and you sent words back. And so I said, okay. And the thing is, you got to meet people where they are, and you're at texting, and I'm at voice memoing. So I know everyone's going to be like, am I listening to the last episode? Conrad was sick again. This is daycare. And it's like, honestly, they should give you a discount the first 6 months because they're never going. And then I think if you got a discount, it would encourage people to keep their sick children at home because we're paying full price. You go, you got to go. You know, like, I mean, it's like when I told you about how my high school, you got to skip a final if you had perfect attendance. So everybody went sick, like, you know, thermometers hanging out of their mouth, blankets wrapped around them, just trying to get through pre-calc for no reason. So Conrad has been at home the last 3 days, just, you know, coughing in my face. And then I kept being like, oh, it's baby germs. That's just little baby stuff. I woke up this morning so sick. Now, to be fair, I did drink last night. But at 37, I know the difference between a hangover and a sickness. And I can tell you, I don't think the drinking's helping. But I have such a sore throat, like a terribly sore throat.
No.
And I don't even have tonsils. So for me to have, I just have a vacant parking lot of a throat.
Wow, wow, wow.
And I had my tonsils taken out when I was 12 because I would get strep throat once a month.
Holy crap.
It was like so chronic for me. And my grandfather, who was a pediatrician for 50 years, said I had the biggest tonsils he'd ever seen in his professional career. And then when they went to take, when they take your tonsils out, they take out these other things called adenoids that are like also there. My adenoids had vanished. My tonsils had run them out of town. They'd eaten them.
Pushed them out. Cannibalized the adenoids.
My tonsils gentrified my throat. And my adenoids said, we can't afford to live here anymore.
We can't make it. They were gone. Mm-hmm. Subsumed.
I just, you know, I really love my son. He's such a joy. And, you know, this is probably a good plug for my other podcast, I Love My Kid Butt, that I host with two very funny comedians where we just fully complain about being parents. And so if that's energy you like, skip on over there. But I really do love him. But it's like, I am just constantly battling something.
Yeah.
But that's, guess that's life right now. Does that make sense? You have animal children and a spouse.
So sweet of you to even, for you to even consider them in this. You know, that's very kind of you.
And they have sickness.
Right. And they go through it and then you're affected by it. I know. But I mean, you know, it's the need that Conrad has when he's sick though, right? Like, I feel like if I was a parent and my kid was sick, you would very much see me in full PPE. Like, I would come there, like, I would take care of you, but you'd be like, mommy, why are you covered in plastic? And that's also why I know I can't be a parent.
Like, and the nanny came yesterday because he had been feeling better. We just, like, kept him home so he could sleep. He took a four-hour nap the day we were supposed to record where I was like, I don't have time. And then I was like, well, I guess I actually have an Oppenheimer length of time. Plug for that. Naomi and I are in Oppenheimer. We're not. I'm fully kidding. But the nanny was masked yesterday, and CJ and I were like, why she got a mask on? And now here I am, like, I can't move.
Yes, yes. She knew. Exactly.
I can't.
Exactly.
So I had two shows tonight. They're canceled. I had to cancel them.
Well, I'm going to point out, Megan says she feels so sick, but she has not stopped running her mouth once. And that's what I love about Megan, because she going to push the F through. She's now taking a sip of tea. She's taking a sip of tea, you guys. Megan will push through no matter what. She's like, I am on death's door. Mm-hmm. Let's do this. And you know what that makes you? That makes you a survivor.
Keisha Cole.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. You understand. Mm-hmm. Okay. Megan said, you ain't keeping me down. And that is very much the theme of this movie.
You are keeping me in my house. I can do anything in my house, but to get in my car and have to go someplace, I cannot do that. I also can't get anyone sick through Zoom.
I know, but I'm just thinking about you with your painful throat. You know, I'm always saying you must protect your instrument, you know, to people in general. It's like, this is your work. This is your moneymaker. The voice, Megan Gailey. So I want you to just like make sure you're getting honey. You're getting lemon.
This is honey. This is tea and honey. Okay. You want to hear something that's going to make your blood boil? One of the shows tonight was a homework show. For those who have not heard our topic about homework shows, it's when you have to do homework outside of stand-up to prepare for a show. Mm-hmm. And so it was a homework show. And guess what? I'd already done the homework. I'd made a PowerPoint about Daisy Duck erasure.
No.
Yes.
So that's real homework. That was a real assignment. Wow.
I found out Daisy at one point was suicidal.
What?
Yeah, in the 1940s.
Okay, now this is a spinoff. This is a separate podcast. Then we've got to get into the history of that because I have questions. But quite honestly, we have got to stay on task because we are giving you nonstop coverage of Black Music Month with the Lifetime premiere of Keisha Cole. This is my story. Now, yes, Keisha Cole, This Is My Story is Keisha's story, okay? Because this is a biopic that follows Keisha through her early days in Oakland, honing her musical talents, to her rise as a multi-platinum selling recording artist and television personality. And I'm telling you, Keisha plays herself, okay? So this is her story on every kind of level. And it's a story of tragedy, love, and overcoming obstacles to achieve your wildest dreams. And it premieres Saturday, June 24th at 8 p.m. only on Lifetime. So you know what? We're going to get into it.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Now, okay, this is a movie that I will tell you this. As someone who did not know Keisha Cole's backstory, this really told you everything, but there was a lot to cover because you're watching her own career, but also her family dynamics. And the movie kind of goes in two-year increments, basically, because so much happens. And it shows you the changes and the growth in Keisha's life. But the biggest undercurrent and the true crux of this story is her relationship with her mother, who is an active drug addict, who goes in and out of rehab as her daughter builds up this amazing music career.
And I think we know from being daughters and also from being Lifetime savants that the mother-daughter dynamic is ripe with strife. Everything, everywhere, all at once. The Academy Award-winning film from this year, mother-daughter dynamic, you know, Steel Magnolias. So the list goes on. And to add onto it as well that one of the people in that dynamic struggles with addiction only makes that, I think, that relationship all the more beautiful at moments and then also all the more heartbreaking.
Well, I'm going to say this, right? Her mother is played by the iconic Debbie Morgan, okay? Blacktress extraordinaire Debbie Morgan. And she left no crumbs. She really said, oh, every scene I need to be turning it up. Every scene, I'm either at like a manic high or a low low. And even when I'm trying to be good, it's like not quite right. Like every scene, Debbie ain't playing. She ain't playing.
And I loved that she was in most of the movie. So it's like they made a great choice to center it around that relationship. I also thought it was such a good depiction because it's like, I leave the movie, despite all the things that happen, going, she is my favorite character. Mm. And you may go, the addict who really makes her children's lives more difficult. But it's like, she portrays her in a way of like, listen, I am a fun, cool mom. I just have demons. And so it's like, she is not the demon. She is a wonderful woman who had to make really difficult choices because of her addiction, but she's still like a bright light in the movie. Is that crazy of me?
Well, I definitely disagree.
Okay.
But maybe I could also say this as someone who has a parent who is an addict. So that could also be playing in, but it's like her, but mom, because here's one of the big things in the movie, you guys, is that like, as Keisha's coming up, she is constantly bringing her family in, right? Mm-hmm. So I think where I was upset with the mom was these moments where it's like, so for instance, Keisha Cole, which I didn't know, she had several reality shows. And the family would be centered in the reality shows. And, you know, obviously that means they would be getting paychecks. Like, family was on payroll.
Yes.
And initially, the first reality show, it is when her mother has come out of rehab, right? So they think they're getting, you know, it's about rebuilding, but mom is ostensibly clean and then changes that and then is like out here trying to do her own reality show separate. You know what I mean? Like, that's where it was like, oh, like she can't keep her chaos.
No.
Like, she gets very mean. She gets very mean and she's like trying to like get hers. And you're like, but Keisha is literally keeping you alive.
Yeah, it's very selfish. It's, you could even chalk it up to being a selfish disease in and of itself.
Yeah.
But I also go, well, should you have your mother immediately on a reality show fresh from rehab?
But
and the thing is, as a viewer, yes. You know, I'm watching The Housewives. I'm watching Luann get arrested, go to rehab, come home, and I'm saying, give me more. But like, I do think I think the rehab place would go, yeah, maybe a little bit more quiet existence for the first bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, you got bills to pay. Now, how much did you, I, and I'm like embarrassed to say this, I didn't know much about Keisha Cole's career at all.
I knew her music. Like, I knew obviously all the like the hits, you know, played on the radio, but I didn't know like the backstory.
I didn't even know the hits.
Well, Megan, this is what this movie is for. This is the story, and now you know. You know she has 47 jobs and has done her best. I mean, she was also like a hustler from the moment she was like a kid. Because basically she grows up in foster care. And this is the other thing though. So like, because of her mom's drug addiction, she was raised by another family, an adoptive family. And the woman, Yvonne, who is the adopted mom, she was like really mean to her when she was younger.
And I wrote in the notes, why do mean people adopt children? But then I'm like, oh, does this type of needing to raise other people's children make you mean?
Well, right. I mean, this is because that's the thing, because we do end up seeing Yvonne later in the movie, right? We kind of see her in the beginning when Keisha's young, and then later she's like, yes, I will take care of the baby and I'm here to support you. And so you're like, okay, maybe it is that feeling of, because it seems like what you get is that Yvonne is frustrated that Keisha keeps going to her mother, because even when Keisha's like a teenager, she's taking what little money she has and giving it to her mother so that she'll like buy food for herself and stuff. So she's been taking care of her even before she had anything to give. And I think Yvonne is like, stay away from her. But I think when you see it initially, right? Like, I only kind of got that by the end of the movie. Because in the beginning, I was like, Yvonne, would you lay off of this girl?
Yeah. So the movie, when we open in Oakland, it's 1997. And this is beyond unrelated to the film. But her and her then boyfriend, and you know, they're like teen loves. We're talking like, I thought they were 12, but apparently they were 17.
I know, me too. I thought they were young. They were much younger.
So her, Keisha and her, like, you know, teen boyfriend are sitting on a stoop of a house. And all I kept thinking is, I wonder how much that house is worth now. Because the Bay Area real estate is some of the most expensive in the country, probably even the world.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we're down here complaining in LA and it's like, oh, you go to San Francisco and you're like, what? And I know Oakland has like just blown up in that sense. Even when we're watching these films, I can't help but wonder, has inflation touched everything? Everything we see.
Absolutely. When you were a little kid, did you know, and would you say to people, I want to be an actor or I want to be a comedian or anything like that?
Not really. I mean, I was like younger, and then I think I got to a point where I almost felt ashamed of that, or that was like, oh, well, that's not going to happen for you. Like, I was almost like embarrassed. So then I phased out of it, and then I phased back into it.
But when did you, how old were you when you phased out of it?
Probably like 16.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That kind of makes sense.
And then I phased back in at like 18. So, you know.
Okay. So it's sure. Because I was like, because the thing is, what I get from, like, what made me ask you that question is like, you know, there's a moment in the movie where Keisha, she like gets up in church in front of everybody and is like, I want to be a singer and I want to use my gift to save my family. And I was like, you know, and we always see these moments in biopics, this idea that someone was like, I knew from a very early age I wanted to be a star.
Yeah.
And I will say, when I was younger, I definitely did. Like, I was somebody who, you know, I would say like the 90s were the time of black TV shows. So I grew up being like, that's what I want to be. I was like, put me on A Different World immediately.
Sister, sister.
Yes. I was like, I want to be a singer. Like, I would sing all the time, top of my lungs, like do all that kind of stuff that I was like, this is what I want to do. And then I think maybe I actually stopped saying it or feeling it as I got to college, maybe. But there's a moment, have I talked on the pod about that moment where I was in high school and there was a teacher, we had a hip hop teacher who would work with a lot of famous musicians. So she was like connected. And I one time said to her, I was like, can you help make me famous or something? And she was like, what do you do? I was like, I sing. And she was like, do you? And then everybody in the class was like, oh yeah, yeah, she can sing. And she was like, sing for me. So I sang I Turn to You by Christina Aguilera, if that's in a time capsule. In the next class, she came and she gave me a number of a producer. She was like, I told him about you. And he says he really wants to work with a young person that he can mold and like somebody at your age, whatever. And it was funny, though, because what we also learned in that thing, because she goes, come here. She was like at the piano and she goes, sing this note. And I couldn't sing the notes back to her. Like, I literally can sing what I hear. Right. And then she goes, girl, you got to get, she goes, get some voice lessons. She goes, get some voice lessons. And then talk to this person. So I started taking voice lessons. But I remember going to my mom being like, look, yay. And she was like, what? So you think you're just going to like leave high school and be a singer? Oh, absolutely not. Like, she was like, absolutely not. We're not doing this. We're shutting this down. And that was kind of the end of that.
I didn't know you could sing.
I can't sing as well now, but I definitely could back then.
Well, I bet you can. I don't think that's something you lose.
I you know what it is, because you know I developed asthma and stuff. I feel like I truly don't have the lung capacity the way I used to.
Yeah.
But there was like a thing where like when I was like 16, 17, I was like, this is what I'm gonna do. We're gonna do it. And then it was like, no.
You were also in New York City. Like, it felt, you know, I went to one of those where it was like agents are in town, and this is Indianapolis. So it was like basically like a ruse. And my parents were like, no, Megan. But like we went and then they were like, I think this is a pyramid scheme. So that's, you know, that was what I was. But I heard some like figure somewhere, and I'm going to get it wrong, where it's like, when we were growing up, like 15% of kids were like, I want to be famous, or like, I'm going to be known. That's like what I'm going to do, which is like pretty high because obviously that's not what's going to happen. And now it's up to like 80% because of the internet
the
and social media and TikTok. So it's like, yeah, you can just make yourself into a star from anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Except if you do stand-up comedy.
Right. Yeah. Because Megan and I discovered, we realized fairly recently that we made a mistake by trying to be good at stand-up, because that's actually not where the money is. And it's like, the game has changed. The game has changed. But if you and I were TikToking, if we were 20 years younger and TikToking, we'd be stars. Yeah. We'd be stars.
Well, but like, I am TikToking, and the people are like, you're really bad. That's the feedback I'm getting on TikTok. I'm like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'm bad. I guess as I sit here in my house that stand-up comedy bought, I need to actually look in the mirror and go, I am bad and I should stop. You're getting sick, Megan. Sick Megan is not well in the head either.
Sick Megan is not optimistic, but you know, I'm feeling it. But I will say this, okay, to obviously bring it back to the motion picture we're discussing. You know, of course, we're talking about like, you know, we're being negative Nancy's, but you know, what you get in this movie is a sense of what Keisha Cole said it's me. Like, she was betting on herself when no one else was. She basically gets a check from social services when she turns 18. I'm not sure why. I did mean to look up the legality of that.
If it's
if you're in the foster care system, I guess, like, once you hit 18 and it's like, okay, the family doesn't care for you anymore, we're going to give you something to get you started. But
great.
I don't know. But she gets a check for $14,000 and she uses that to move to LA in 1999.
Okay, so 14 grand, that's like 30 grand now. I mean, that's a lot for an 18-year-old who's never had any money to get.
Exactly. But then it looks like she's staying in like a motel type of apartment. Yes. But I think a lot of these places in LA, a lot of apartments in LA look like motels.
But the inside was a motel room.
But it's giving studio apartment.
Oh, is that it? Well, yeah, because I was like, I don't think this is a good use of money to be paying nightly. I was very worried.
I know.
The finances. And I think there's also this thing, too, is like, yes, we're being cynical about our own careers, but I think that's because we know how hard it is. And like,
yeah,
you come from a loving mom. I come from two loving parents. Now, they're not in the business, so you're already set behind there. But Keisha's coming. Keisha's coming from a situation that's way, way more difficult than ours to launch yourself into Hollywood. And she did it. And so, yes, we're being negative Nancy's, but it's just to show, like, she did make this happen based on her own will and talent.
Yeah.
And that is something to be celebrated, even though the movie has some darker themes.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, she's basically calling up record labels, being like, will you listen to my demo? I mean, old school, right? Because this is pre-cell phone, honey. She on the landline in her apartment saying, I'm Keisha Cole. Can I sell you my demo?
Is this Death Row Records? This is Keisha Cole. Can I speak to Marcy Phillips? She doesn't work there anymore.
I told my cousin if you call, I'll tell you.
No, he doesn't know me.
Did she just take one more meeting today?
I know I owe you. I'm gonna pay you.
Can I just leave my demo in the lobby?
And then she goes to a party where she meets a producer. His name is Ron Fair, a real guy. He is a white man in a fedora, and I immediately said evil. Like, I literally saw him and was like, oh, he's going to be the person who ruins her. Because I said he's a white man in a fedora.
Yeah, and she met him at a party where everyone was black, and then he's white in a fedora. And so it is, like, obviously multiple red flags. And you just, whenever like, anyone meets a man in Hollywood, you go, well, a predator. You know? And
exactly.
And that, we're... At this point, we're just invested in Keisha and don't want her to be hurt.
Exactly. But we also have seen a lot of these biopics. We know how it goes. So we're like, uh-oh, is this going to be the thing?
Yeah.
But basically, she gives him her demo, but then she also sings for him at the party. Oh, I love a dramatic singing moment where she, like, silences the room. The whole room hushes as Keisha sings.
Here's a CD.
Thank you. I can't wait to listen to it.
Well, you don't have to.
With a voice like that, a record deal is definitely in your future.
But then it takes like a couple years. He basically finds her in 2004. So I think we're like roughly 2002-ish. And then in 2004, he finds her braiding hair at a hair shop. And is literally like, I've been thinking about you ever since we met. I want to offer you a deal at A&M Records.
And she's like, I've been here the whole time.
I know. But then, again, because he's in the fedora in that scene, too, where he tells her, like, I want to sign you. And I said, oh, God, take the fedora off. But he does say, he's like, because she's like, oh, good. I'm like, literally, he pulls her outside to tell her this. And she's like, I'm going to go quit. And he's like, no. Right. Don't quit your job. Get a lawyer. Like, to look at your kind. I go, okay, then Ron might be good. If Ron's telling you to get a lawyer, he might be a good person.
Yeah.
Because he's not trying to ruin you. But then another man in the hair shop is like, I'm a manager, and I can get you a gig. And his name is Manny.
Well, then why weren't any of you helping?
That's what I'm talking about.
I'm like, oh, so the keys to the kingdom are just sitting right here?
I know. Somebody comes and saying, I'm going to sign you to A&M.
He's not a predator either.
I know. It was any time a man showed up being like, I can help you, I had to Google them. I had to say, who were they? What have they done to her? Like, as I'm watching the movie. Because I just needed to know if they were going to, like, steal all of her money or something. So now, basically, getting signed with A&M is basically, you know, the start of it. Keisha's popping off. She's starting to blow up. The song, her first single's a hit. And as this is happening, she is now... Because here's the other thing, too. Keisha has sisters, but they grew up kind of living in different houses. And especially, you see her sister Neffy when she's younger. And Neffy, I would say Neffy and the mom are cut from the same cloth in terms of being very mean and very loud in every scene.
Neffy's at a 10?
At a 10.
And Neffy is probably what CJ sees I am when we are fighting. Because he's always like, put your hands down, stop moving your neck. And I am a white woman from Indianapolis. No, Neffy has lived a life, seen some shit, a black woman from Oakland. So I actually should not be moving my neck the same way. But Neffy honestly was a bit of a cautionary tale to me to go, well, maybe not everything needs to be a 10.
Right. But basically, so it's Neffy and Elite. Those are Keisha's two sisters. And they're like close now and they're all getting ready because Keisha's having an album release party. And Keisha's like trying to get her mom on the phone. She's invited her mom to the party. You know, she still wants her mom to be part of it. And Neffy was like, let it go. Mom is never going to be the one. But you can see too, Neffy's at a 10, but Neffy is a prime example to me of somebody who needed some therapy. She has so much rage and resentment from growing up. Because she even when she's a kid, she says to Keisha, like, well, you light-skinned, so you get to be with a nice family.
That broke my heart.
That's real. And you grow up with that feeling of, like, not only does our own mother not want us, but then when we get separated, you go to, quote-unquote, the better house.
Society doesn't either.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, Neffy got a lot on her shoulders. Neffy got a lot on her shoulders.
I thought, so Neffy represents that, which I think is, like, probably a very real level of anger and resentment. And then Keisha represents the child that's like, I think I can change mom. You know, that hopefulness.
Yes.
And then Elite is younger, I believe, and seems almost like, I don't know mom.
And
so like, I know you guys are mad at her, but like, I wonder if she remembers me. And I actually think this was like a really good representation of all the different ways children can feel about their parents who struggle with a wide range of issues.
Yeah. Totally. So, you know, there's the moment where Keisha's having the album release party and she wants to thank her mom. And I say that was very generous of you to thank the woman who was never there for you. But Frankie's not at the party, but she shows up after the party. But she's also looking healthy. Like, you'd think she might be okay, maybe.
No, and she didn't show up at the party and, like, mess it up. But I do think she was supposed to be there earlier.
Yes.
This is all in Atlanta. And so I do like how it's like, I'm going to Hollywood. And then it's like, well, now I'm going to Black Hollywood. Like, it's like, Keisha Cole, in the words of Candy Burris, she's worldwide. And that is Hollywood in Atlanta, because you don't really need to go that many other places. Now, Keisha plays herself in this movie. And there are some really interesting styling choices. I know we're going back in time, and so in some ways it's a capsule. There's some hair choices, and I know we remember this time. These were popular hairstyles, but at one point she has this like orange-red kind of short hair.
It's giving mullet.
Then with like streaming fire engine red extensions out the back of it. And it is a wonder to behold.
It's 2005. When you say time capsule, I say time capsule. I said, I know this look. Like, I know she pulled these from the vault. She said, what were the iconic looks of the time?
What did I wear to my album release? And that would actually be kind of hard. You know, like, if they said to me, Megan, we need you to get into your jumpsuit you wore to JFL, I'd go, oh my God, I cannot believe I dressed like that. But at the moment, I was like, I'm a 10. And now I look at it and I go, why am I dressed like a realtor?
Of course, things don't go well with mom because even though she seems like she's doing good, the next morning, Keisha's maid finds drugs in the house, in the room mom is staying in. So they end up having an intervention with her to send her to rehab. And the same way you couldn't stop thinking about the cost of a house in Oakland from 1997, I'm looking at the house Keisha's in after her album is a hit. And I was like, I didn't even think you could get a nice house off of your first album. Because all we've been seeing, you know, when you hear the TLC story and you hear the Salt and Pepper stories about how all the groups get shafted on that first album. And it's not until like the second or the third one that they start to like actually get their money.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, I didn't know Keisha could get a mansion already. So this is the thing, these are the things that are taking my brain hold.
Solo artist. Also in okay. Atlanta. So the dollar yeah. goes further.
Yeah.
I was shocked Keisha's manager, the one that we met at the barber shop, he's at the intervention.
Yeah, he's involved. Manny's involved. He's in the family now.
That's a lot. I feel like if I was Keisha's mom, I'd be like, does Manny need to be here? Like, I don't know. It just seemed a little like come one, come all for an intervention that, I don't know. Some of it too is like we're seeing the portrayals of these people on these people's teams, and we also have teams. And so you go, well, I wouldn't have Anne at my dad's intervention. I think Anne would be very uncomfortable with that.
And your dad would be uncomfortable with that.
My dad would go, who is this? And I go, Dad, Anne. And he'd go, I don't know Anne, Megan. Okay.
Now, our next big moment, you know, yeah, we've already talked about, you know, Keisha having her reality shows on BET, but in 2009, our big moment, Hattie, she meets an NBA player yep. named Daniel,
uh-huh.
but his friends call him Booby, yes. and when he says that, I'm out, but Keisha's in, and they're it, the couple, this is her man, he is the one to her.
Yeah, what is his name? I gotta look him up.
I know, they only call him Booby in the IMDb, and I'm like, can you please?
Gibson, okay, his name is Daniel Gibson. So I was looking at Keisha's Wikipedia, sort of following along while I was yes. watching the movie, because I wanted to, you know, have all the info, and so I said to CJ, I go, do you remember an NBA player named Daniel Gibson? And he goes, no, and then he goes, oh, Booby. And I was like, yeah, it is Booby. And he was immediately like, yeah, of course I know Booby. He played on the Cavs. And okay. so he played with the first iteration of the LeBron Cavs. And so oh. when I brought him up, CJ said, oh, yeah, he couldn't win a title. So like even CJ was coming with his own Booby judgment to the movie. Booby didn't have what it took.
What I thought was interesting, though, was like, and this is actually, you know, if I was doing a historical film analysis, what is interesting, so she gets a Booby, right? Then they have their own reality show together. But what's interesting is that you have this person who, now we know, has had multiple reality shows and then still puts out a movie called This Is My Story.
Uh-huh.
And I'm very curious as to how, you know, is there a feeling that, like, the reality shows told something different? Do you know what I mean? Like, because you would think she's already told us her life by letting
yeah.
cameras in to these reality shows. And then here we are in 2023, and she's like, there's more here. You know, and I'm just, and I wonder if it is, like, again, this, you know, more of the emotional reality of her relationship with her mother, right? Obviously, this is scripted, but I'm right. wondering if we're getting more than you would have gotten in a reality show.
Yeah, I'm guessing they tried to put, like, kind of their best foot forward for the reality show. Mm-hmm. And I do think they probably dealt with the mom's struggles because, you know, when she was pitching the reality show, it was about like, we're going to be honest and stuff. But I know from watching reality, that's not really the truth, you know? So I would actually like a biopic of every reality show, but because we see at one point, like her and Booby are having dinner, and you're seeing the cameras and they're sort of having a produced conversation. And he's like, I don't want them in here. And yeah. I think that
yeah.
really happens. And reality TV, it puts a strain on relationships.
Yeah.
Like a lot of reality TV stars are estranged from their parents. It
yeah.
does end up causing strain for the children of the reality stars. The relationships, like there's very few that make it through this.
Well, this was the whole thing, right? Like, this is the problem, because it's like Daniel's like, I want to stop this, right? And so Keisha's like, okay, let's stop the show. But because her whole family's on payroll, they're mad about it. Frankie and yes. Neffy are pissed when she is like, I'm finally saving money for my son to go to school and all this kind of stuff, where it's like, that's the other thing too. I don't know if the whole family should be on your payroll, like on the come up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's how those relationships fracture. It's already bad enough when other people are taking 10% for no reason. But then the person where you're like, hey, do you love me or are you just here because you'll get paid to be here? You know, like with your parents and siblings.
I think this gets talked about a lot in Black family dynamics, especially like athletes. And I always, I feel like I hear especially white people, be very judgmental of it and be like, oh, well, they hired their cousin. And it's like, okay, but white people do that too. You know, like you hire people or you take care of people who are closest to you and that you feel safest with. So, yeah, the family being on the payroll, it complicates everything. Absolutely.
It complicates everything. Because I think especially because again, because what this movie does do a good job of showing you is how desperate Keisha is to save her mother. And so part of the payroll is helping her mother. Because at one point, y'all, Frankie had a radio show and was giving advice. And I said, Frankie, that's her mom. I was like, Frankie, I don't know if you need to be giving advice.
Fresh from being in jail for 2 years, which I'm like, wow, this is a great pipeline. Jail to syndicated radio show. And it's like all because she's Keisha Cole's mom?
Exactly. But I think that's the trouble you have where it's like, I get you want to keep mom close. And you think that if you keep her busy, that's going to help her not do those things, right? And that is where it is. Because I think you can have, like, I'm one of my cousins. I love her to death. If I ever became famous and needed somebody, I put her on payroll in a heartbeat. Because I know she know how to just, like, work. She would keep stuff together. And she would tell me when I was looking busted. And that's what you really want with your family actually, around you. Someone who goes, don't say that and don't wear that. And that's what you're paying for.
Someone who's willing to tell you no. Yeah, there's there's a Real Housewife of Atlanta right now, Sonia, and she's a former Olympic star, and her parents, sister, brother-in-law, and their two kids all live with her and her husband, and they do, like, work for her, but you see that, like, she was like, hey, my husband wants you to move out, and the sister got pissed and, like, stormed out and was like, I don't think you realize how much I do for you. And so now she's in a fight with not only like an employee, but also her sister. And so then you're going to be bringing up shirts you guys borrowed in 2000. You know, it's just like way more layered. I can't imagine being in business with my brothers. And they're like savvy.
I was going to ask you, would either of you, I know, I was like, would you take either of them with you?
Yeah. One's a lawyer, one's a realtor. I definitely like consult them and ask them questions and stuff. I don't think they'd want to be in business with me. I think they'd go, I'm not working for my little baby dum-dum sister.
Let's take a quick break. But before we do, I just need to step on the fact that you guys, Megan is sick right now. She has been caring for a sick child. She can barely breathe and she has never been funnier to me. Okay. So as we go to break, I want you to think about what a professional she is and how lucky I am to have her in my life.
Wow.
We'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
And we're back.
I thought that was a good time to take a break because we have two big bombshells I found that happened right after this, which is that Keisha finds another woman's panties in her bed. Keisha finds another woman's panties in her bed, and then Booby blames her.
Well, yeah, because she's like, Booby, you're not even on the road. Like, I assumed when you were on the road, you were cheating, but like, you're at home in my house. You're not even.
Yeah. Yeah.
And your name's Booby. So you already got an extra set of boobies. And he's like not that good at basketball and not that high. Like, sorry, those are just the facts.
I know. Rude. And he's like, well, you don't spend time with me, Keish. It's like, no, Booby, you need to stop. There's nothing I think is more terrible than a man getting caught and then trying to make it the woman's fault.
I know.
That he did something dirty.
And she brings it up, and I think it's a very valid point. You knew who I was when you married me. When you met, I was Keisha Cole. They met in the movie,
that's
at least,
true.
At a photo shoot where she is a A-list singer.
Yeah.
And he is maybe got drafted. So it's like, you married a famous woman. So the time, that's going to be one of the sacrifices.
Right. So that happens. Then the next one, and immediately Akeisha's like, I want a divorce, which I love. I'm like, don't stay. Yes. It's like, you got your own money. Get out of here. But then she goes over to Neffy's house and she finds Frankie and Neffy shooting their own reality show. And I just felt so bad for her in this moment because it just felt like she was on her own out here. Keisha was on her own the entire time.
Yeah, for your family to go behind your back on like a business thing, I think is really messed up.
Yeah. Yeah, and also it's like they're taking advantage of their relationship with her. And it's like, you wouldn't even have this opportunity if not for her.
No.
She says she didn't want to do it, so you decided to just go do your own thing. And then, of course, it doesn't even last because mom is using again and is so volatile. They're like, we actually can't film any of this or use it. So this is not going to happen. But, Neffy is so mean to her, too. So I just felt like, I can't. I really, really can't. I found, Keisha is on her own, and I just felt very bad for her. And I didn't even know how she kept making good music when nobody is supporting her.
Yeah, I did wonder watching this how her real sisters were going to feel about their portrayal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, because you also get, because the movie opens with her walking into Frankie's funeral, her mom's funeral.
Yeah.
And you see in the moment that she's like, oh, well, I guess we finally get together again. Her and her sisters. Because it takes you a bit to put together who these people are to each other. And so, some time has passed since they talked. And then you see this moment, and I go, you know what? I understand, Keisha. I understand why maybe some time has passed.
Right. So, Booby is in her rearview mirror, and she's out one night. I believe she's at a poetry jam, is the energy I'm getting. And she meets a young man, 23 to her 37, and his name is Nico Kale.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There is an extra H in that last name, so it is not the lettuce, but pronounced as the lettuce. Now, I wrote down, is he a slam poet? Because he is maybe rapper / poet. He is he's using his words to perform in some way. And they end up having a baby together.
This is what I mean when there's too much to cover in a biopic. Because I was kind of like, it was never clear to me why him in this moment, right? Like, because obviously they meet and I get being attracted, like thinking someone's attractive. But because he is younger and she's got so much going on. And one of the things too is that what she really does want is that nuclear family. A running theme is how she always wants to be home for dinner and everybody around the table. You know, growing up in foster care, growing up with volatility, that's what she wants, which is why I was like, but he's 23. I don't know if he could be the one to give you that right now. You know what I mean? Just because he's a young guy.
No, and basically it's like he's maybe 30 seconds of the movie despite having a child with her, because he comes home very late one night and you get the sense that this is sort of what he always does, and they have a baby. So you can't she's a very successful woman. You can't just leave any woman flapping in the wind alone. I think Nico is jealous of her. And I think the things that attracted him to her also led to him being jealous of her. Mm-hmm. I did look up Nico on Instagram.
Let's highly suggest.
It is wild, which then led me to their baby, Tobias, who's only three. So this is pretty recent. Oh. Baby Tobias is three and he has 95,000 followers, the baby.
Okay, wow. This goes back to you and I being in the wrong line of work, you know, and not having the contacts, because he doesn't have to put up reels. He doesn't have to go on TikTok. He just got 95. Okay.
He's really cute. And it does seem, and I saw also that Nico makes really beautiful posts about Keisha on Mother's Day. So it seems like they are co-parenting, at least from Instagram. But also, I know someone who looked like they were co-parenting really well on Instagram. And the mom DM'd me and was like, it's not what you see. I said, okay.
Whoa. Wait, also, why does she, did you comment something that made her DM you?
No. No, it's just when you have babies around the same time as some other gals, you end up forming kind of a relationship and a bond with them, even if you're not necessarily friends outside of that, because you're going through the same, like, when did you sleep train? Is he eating? Oh my God, look, they're walking. So it's like these milestones that you feel like you're kind of sharing with these other people.
I see. That makes sense. So it's just like, yeah, that conversation. But also I love, now, are you following Baby Tobias or did you just take a peek?
No, I just took
Are you going to add him to your list, Baby Tobias?
I just took a peek, but maybe I will follow. He's really cute. He's got like a little ponytail and like he has like little jacket and he's always celebrating his birthday.
I think Conrad should follow him.
Great.
That needs to be the vibe.
Okay. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. You know, there's like a two-year-old who's on Vanderpump Rules, Sheena's daughter named Summer Moon. And I would pay like probably a pretty crazy amount for Summer Moon and Conrad to have a play date. Like I got to get them in the same room.
Oh my gosh. So after this, Frankie is now self-checked into rehab, which is a big step that she's done it herself. Because it seems like every other time, like obviously there was intervention, then she goes to jail, you know, then it's like, you know, court mandated. So this is her checking in. And Yvonne, Keisha's adoptive mother, was like, hey, I think I might have found your bio dad. And that's also something that Keisha had wanted to know from an early age, and her mother would never tell her. Her mother's like, I don't know, it doesn't matter. So then Keisha has to go visit Frankie at rehab, basically being like, I think it's like maybe to get like a DNA sample or get the okay to like give this information. There's some reason why she needs to tell her mom, and you know, and basically is kind of talking to her mom about like, you know, well, why'd you go to rehab? You didn't tell me everything else, you know, and Frankie's basically like, you know, I had to do this myself. I had to go myself and I want to get these demons off my back. And, you know, and Keisha's like, you know, well, what about me? And Frankie says something that, to me, it's right out of like an old black lady playbook. She goes,
Keisha, you helped through the lion's den with a pork chop on your back and you've been all right because God got his hands on you.
You walked through the lion's den with a pork chop on your back and you've been all right. And I said, if that ain't a phrase, if that's not poetry, move over, Nico. Okay? Because Frankie's got the poetry, but it's also like, it's oddly
true,
moving. Right. Yeah. It's like oddly moving in that moment because it is like a wild sentence, but it's also like, that's all you've seen in this movie. It's like, Keisha literally got herself out of foster care, moved out on her own, made herself a star, and then it like made it so that she could give opportunity to everybody in her family.
Yeah. And when her and Nico break up, she has this revelation of like, I need to find happiness and peace from within myself. I've been searching for it from external factors and it's not happening. You know, I have the career, I have the baby, I've had the husbands and that's, that hasn't filled it. And she has this really heartbreaking, but I think beautiful moment with her mom where she's like, you didn't want me basically. And her mom's like, I did want you. It was going to be better for you and your life if I was not in it. And I think that is so hard and so honest. And I do think there are parents that feel that way, that do give up their children. But I fully understand why the child perceives it as like, you didn't want me, or I wasn't a good enough reason for you to change your life.
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly. I mean, so this brings us to 2021 when they're celebrating little Tobias's birthday, which I guess would have been his first birthday at this point, since we all know IRL 3. Okay. And she seems to be doing well. And she literally is like, I'm about to be 61 or something. And she's like, I'm getting better. And, you know, she has her own apartment that Keisha set her up with. And you think she's on an upswing. And then we see her using. And she overdoses and passes on her birthday. On her own birthday. Not on Keisha's birthday. Her own birthday. And I mean, if that's not gutting, I don't know what is. And that brings us back to the funeral we saw in the opening scene. Yeah. And it's like, oh my God. Oh my God, the heartbreak.
Yeah, at the very end of the movie, there's a title card about fentanyl and fentanyl awareness, which makes me believe that her mom probably died because of drugs that was laced with fentanyl, which is like, the 60-year-old woman, I mean, to be an addict and live to 60 is actually like, it sounds crazy to say, like impressive, but then it's like, yeah, there's all this other street shit. And we know people that die from fentanyl and people that You're like, oh, that they were, it was just their birthday and they're trying to have like a fun. It's so heartbreaking. I guess the silver lining of this is we do see the three sisters come together.
Right.
They release doves at the funeral. It seems like a very beautiful remembrance of Frankie. And you hope that the healing can begin.
Right, right. And you see at the end, you know, Keisha's back in the studio is how we end up. And we, you know, over an image of her mother, you know, the real life Frankie. And she's singing a song that they had sang together earlier in the movie. And you just kind of see, you know, the extent to which it's like, Keisha's on a journey of healing and has to learn to, and as she said, learning to feel enough on her own, you know, internally. And you're just like, And oh my God.
Yeah.
I just feel like I would like give Keisha Cole a hug. I want to send her a gift basket. I just want to be like, you are amazing. You never stop. Your work and your trials and tribulations are seen.
We should send her a pork chop and go, you know what? You should get to eat this damn pork chop. You don't need to wear it on your back anymore. But it really, it's why her music resonates with so many people, because there is like true pain and healing and love. And because when she's singing that song about her mom, which also does have a line from the Reading Rainbow song, it's like butterfly in the sky. And then I was like, oh, we're about to get the Reading Rainbow song. And then it was a different song. And I go, who stole what? Okay, we need to get Marvin Gaye's family in here, because they'll get to the bottom of anybody stealing any music. All right, we thought this would be a good time to do real hero, real villain, since this is a movie based on a real person. My real villain is drugs. Just the way they can take away a life. And the fractures that has amongst an entire community of people is so heartbreaking.
Yes, 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 yes. I guess my, you know, real villain, because I will say this didn't really give us a lot of bad people, to speak. But I will say, you know, Booby was villainous for me. Booby was villainous, because you can't be out here sleeping with people in your own like marital home. Leaving underwear and then trying to turn the tables on your wife? Well, you never talk to me. Oh, so that's why you had sex with somebody in our bed? And she couldn't even be bothered to put her panties on before she left? No, Booby. Villainous.
Yeah. I don't think Booby ever won a championship, so he's been punished. Who is your real hero?
I mean, Keisha's my hero.
Yeah.
Keisha's my hero. Of course, the hero. So it's like not, it's like it is what the movie, like, I just think Keisha did not have a lot of support and she really just kept doing it. She just kept doing it, Megan.
I know. I hope this movie was healing for her to make too. And it seems like it's going to be such a success too. You know, I see the billboards everywhere. It's such a celebration of especially these Black women who really have overcome so much to be superstars. So I hope that gives her the hero's ending she deserves. I would like to also offer up Yvonne's husband as a real hero. Now, do we know his name? No. But he was kind. And more importantly, he saved the $14,000 check, which set all of this in motion. So I say, now that's a hero.
Absolutely. For him to be like, a check came for you, because at this point, Yvonne had kicked Keisha out the house.
Right. And he hid it from Yvonne. He hid it from her.
Because you know Yvonne would have said, I earned that check raising that girl.
Right.
And he said, Keisha, this is for you.
Oh my gosh, she would have bought so many Bibles.
Oh my God, you guys, next week we are bringing you our final Black Music Month film, and it is Toni Braxton's Unbreak My Heart. Yes, this is a Lifetime original that follows the Grammy Award-winning singer's journey from discovery to stardom, chronicling the measures that the artist took to make herself and her family whole again, and the path to becoming an inspiration to singers around the world. So you can watch this with your existing Lifetime Movie Club subscription or start an account today by going to lifetimemovieclub.com/podcast and get a free 7-day trial. So you got options. And also while you're there, you might as well watch Tony and my favorite, Fallen Angels Murder Club.
Oh,
okay?
Yes.
Remember Tony from Fallen Angels.
I to prep for this movie, I am going to be doing a lot of singing and crying in the shower, as Miss Toni Braxton would want.
Absolutely. All right, you guys. We'll see you next week.
Unbreak our hearts.
I love a Lifetime movie. If you love Lifetime movies as much as we do, tune into Lifetime and LMN to watch all the new and classic movies that we can't get enough of. Check your local listings to find out what's airing on Lifetime and LMN, because it just might be the movie we talk about next. And wait, there's more. Check out the new bomb Lifetime podcast, Crime of a Lifetime, where two amazing hosts take you beyond the headlines of a crime and they get into the nitty-gritty twists and turns of the story. That's my jam.
This podcast would not be possible if it was just Naomi and me, for sure.
Absolutely not.
I Love a Lifetime Movie is produced by Aisha Jordan.
With sound editing and mixing by the Podglomerate.
Executive produced by Jesse Katz.
With original music by Blake Maples.
And hosted by Naomi and Megan.
You should know that by now. If you've gotten to this point, you should know that we're the host, okay?
It feels like we don't even need to say it, but we'll put ourselves in the credits.
Copyright 2023 A&E Television Networks, LLC. All rights reserved.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.